So when my EMDR therapist went through a certain trauma of mine, she specifically asked me, where's God right now? You know, why don't you ask him, where is he?
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios in Conway, Arkansas, broadcasting in over 161 languages to 127 countries to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, I have with me Amanda Pulley. Amanda, it's good to have you with us here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, so I want to talk about something that I don't know a whole lot about, basically because when I went to school, this stuff had not been discovered yet. But in reading about it, it really has become a very good tool for people who are suffering from certain, I guess we could say mental illnesses, certain trauma maybe would be the best word.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is EMDR and brain spotting. So tell us what EMDR, first of all, stands for and the basic concept behind it.
Yeah, so first, I mean, I'll just say I'm not the expert on any of these things.
Well, you're more an expert on this than I am. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, so EMDR, really what it stands for is the eye movement and desensitization reprocessing. And it really works with your brain to let your brain heal itself. And the process is a little different. A lot of those of us who've experienced trauma have experienced a lot of talk therapy where we're digging into, well, this happened and then that happened. And in some ways that's making us relive that trauma. EMDR, you don't actually have to talk about it. Your brain does all the work, and it has to do with the bilateral stimulation, which can be done through a light bar or eye movements, or it can also be done through what they call tappers, which vibrate in your hands back and forth, creating that bilateral stimulation. So really, we do bilateral stimulation every day when we walk. So sometimes we'll notice that, you know, clients or individuals, even in our daily life, might be more comfortable talking about something if we're walking.
Right.
You know, and so that's just a natural way that our body is doing that bilateral stimulation to process.
Right. You know, and that's sidebar here is one of the big reasons that we need to have physical activity when we are in the midst of depression or anxiety, that we don't isolate, stay in bed all day, so that we are getting that movement together. So one thing that you said was that the brain does it by itself. So kind of walk me through that. How is it that the brain does it by itself?
So one side of our brain holds on to memories in a way that it breaks it down into segments. It gives us words to be able to express it. It's very much like a story. This happened and then that happened, and we can explain it. The other side of our brain holds memories in non-word form. And so that's where a smell might be something that we are associating in our brain, and we're actually, the amygdala is being triggered that, hey, something dangerous is happening. And a lot of times we don't always think about that side of our brain that is being triggered by something that is emotional, a feeling in the room, a smell, a sense, you know, all of those different things. And so when we look at how the brain is working, we really want to combine both sides of the brain to be able to process. And so EMDR allows us to use that bilateral stimulation to activate both sides of the brain at the same time.
Sure. And I don't think anyone would argue the point that a smell or a feeling could bring certain emotional responses. You know, my nanny Shep, she wore Red Door perfume. And so anytime that I smell an elderly woman, I shouldn't say elderly woman, but most time it's elderly women that wear Red Door. It brings back these floods of memories of being with her and the things that we did. So what's one way that a certain smell could bring a trauma response or a trigger.
Yeah, I mean, it's much the same as what you're talking about. I'll give you a personal example. So I'm a survivor of human trafficking, and my trafficker required me to wear a perfume that was like the woman's version of his cologne. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I'm walking through a store and I smell this cologne or perfume, it immediately can cause me, or used to cause me, this like inward panic, which could then turn into like me feeling as if like he's right there again. Mm-hmm. Even though I have been away from him for years, it's like everything in my body tenses up. Mm-hmm. And my brain doesn't recognize that the trauma has actually stopped.
Right.
And so Vander Kolk is one of the individuals who's written kind of the premier work on how the body holds trauma. The Body Keeps the Score is the name of his book. And he really dives into all the science behind how they've been able to prove that our body actually stores trauma even more than our brain stores. This is what happened, and this is how it happened, or why it happened, or the scenario behind it. And because our body's holding it, if we don't actually use both sides of our brain to process it, that's where we see a lot of individuals with a high ACE score. They're actually suffering from a lot of physical illness, but their lifespan actually decreases the higher their ACE score, because their body is holding on to all that trauma. So this type of therapy, EMDR and brain spotting, actually both use the therapeutic process with that bilateral stimulation and working on both sides of the brain to process through the body memories as well, therefore releasing people from really the chains of all that trauma created.
Yeah. I've had some friends who have been in the military and have PTSD from that. And EMDR has worked so well for them just in one or two sessions that they were able to stay away from certain triggers and major panic attacks or anxiety attacks. In your research or your life experience, how effective do you see EMDR?
I do think it's very effective. It was actually Robin Shapiro's the creator of EMDR, and she created it after working with veterans from Vietnam. And so they just saw that these veterans weren't having success with other therapeutic modalities, and sure, that's kind of why it was created. And in the beginning of the process, EMDR was mainly used with veterans. Mm-hmm. Now that we've recognized PTSD is a much broader category, that it's not just, I say just veterans, but it's not only veterans,
right,
who are affected by PTSD. Many other people can have it as well. It's broadened in what they're utilizing it for, but EMDR can also be used for things like enhancing sports performance. Any sort of negative belief that you have about yourself can be treated with EMDR. And so the effectiveness of it is very broad and can be utilized in multiple different healing struggles that someone might have. I do think that it's really important to find a EMDR therapist who's been trained properly.
Sure.
So just like every therapeutic modality, people are trained differently. Mm-hmm. And my personal experience with EMDR, when I first found EMDR, I had a therapist who was not properly trained, and mm-hmm, I feel like it actually harmed me more, sure, than it helped. And then after that, I was able to find someone who actually was very well trained, mm-hmm, and that has made a huge difference in being able to heal those traumas.
Sure. It's just like, I don't want to use any other field for comparison because I don't want to offend anyone.
Right.
But there are providers, not just mental health, but other health providers that do things that they're not certified in, but sometimes it does lead to more trauma. Mm-hmm. Or it is a person, let's say somebody goes to a therapist or whomever to have EMDR, and they're not properly trained. It causes more trauma. Well, that may cause that person to not want to try any other therapy at all. So we've got to be, when you're looking for a therapist, you're looking for a mental health provider, it is important to do your due diligence to see what they are certified in or what they're not certified in.
Yeah.
So when EMDR really first started coming out after I graduated, and from the outside looking in, which you have a different perspective because you've been trained, you've been taught. When I first thought about EMDR and the manual, because it's manual processing really that takes over, mm-hmm. I have always been a big skeptic of things like hypnotherapy. And so I kind of put EMDR and hypnotherapy in the same boat of, okay, well, what is actually going on here? But what I've found, and I'm just sharing this for our listeners, is that if you don't want hypnotherapy to work, it's not going to work. But if you don't want EMDR to work, it's not going to work. Or if you don't want psychotherapy to work, it's not going to work. So it is buying into, hey, this can help. Am I going to submit myself to do what my therapist is instructing me to do? Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, there definitely is that buy-in that is needed that affects people. We've had people come into the office who are skeptical, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, I don't know if this can work for me. Mm-hmm. And that's where a therapist who's well-trained can do something called a bee sting memory. Mm-hmm. And it's literally just a little annoyance that is happening. So I went to Walmart and the bagger took forever, mm-hmm. right? And this is how I felt about it. And it told me that I'm going to be late. And therefore, I'm a bad person because I didn't plan my day well enough, right? In the grand scheme of life, is that a big deal? No, probably not, right? And so they can use a memory like that to, or an experience like that, to actually help you process utilizing EMDR to learn how it feels. And I'm a big believer that not every modality is right for every person.
Sure.
I like EMDR. I really am drawn, even though I've been trained in EMDR, I am more naturally inclined to brain spotting. Mm-hmm. And I like certain parts of that modality even over EMDR. But because I want to be able to provide a whole toolbox of tools to clients that I serve, I want to be proficient in EMDR. And not even just proficient, I want to really excel at knowing those things. I use a lot of internal family systems and parts work. All of that, you know, all of those tools are important, and being able to combine them and interweave them is often more effective than having someone just, in my opinion anyway, than having one modality that this is all I do with the client.
Sure.
Because we have to be person-centered in the approach with clients, not, you know, here's my structured mm-hmm. way to heal this
sure.
scenario in your life. You're the expert in it, not
sure.
me.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think it's important to note that not every therapist is going to fit you.
Correct.
And where the rub comes into that is, at least in Central Arkansas, if you call any therapist office to get an appointment, you're looking anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to get in just for that initial consultation. Well, you've waited 4 to 6 weeks, you get in, you don't feel comfortable with that therapist, you don't agree with their case plan or their treatment plan, and so you want to try another therapist. Well, then you're 4 to 6 weeks now again. And so what I tell people, and you can agree if this is good advice or not, hopefully it is that to go ahead and stick with that therapist until your next appointment with someone else. That way you may not be getting specialized treatment, but you're not getting nothing. I wouldn't go as far to say, hey, let's do EMDR if they're not certified in EMDR, but definitely talk therapy or something very, very, I hate to say basic because it's not basic, it is complex, but at least you're with somebody working towards something. And you're not just out here in life not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So in development of EMDR, then we get brain spotting. Dr. Grand, I believe it was, kind of come into that. And this is something, honestly, that I've just in talking to John about, your husband, even really ever heard of it. And so I know very little about it. So how did Dr. Grand take EMDR and continue this work into brain spotting?
To my understanding, it was that he was utilizing EMDR with very complex trauma clients. And throughout that process, he noticed that when their eyes were moving rapidly, it was taking them outside their window of tolerance very rapidly and causing the reprocessing to be very hard for them. Mm-hmm. And so in that process, he started noticing that clients with really complex trauma often would start finding they didn't want their eyes to move that fast. Mm-hmm. And it was more comfortable for them to find a fixed point. Mm-hmm. And so he really just started playing with it and going, okay, well, what's happening for them in finding that fixed point? And so we have, he talks about how a fixed point can either activate or deactivate, mm-hmm. depending on where we look and what is processing through us as we're looking in those places. Mm-hmm. So really, it was kind of found almost by accident, mm-hmm. and through exploration and watching, being in tune to the clients that he was serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so in seeing these points, depending on where they stopped, would indicate what they were feeling or going through at that moment. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, basically, so with brain spotting, we would have you just kind of start thinking about something that was challenging or maybe a bad memory, bad experience that you've had. And we would have you rate that on a scale of 0 to 10, just letting us know, like, okay, where, how distressing in this moment does it feel? And then you start on one side and very, very slowly, they use something called a pointer. Literally, you could do it with a pen, just something for them to fix their eyes at. And you start at one side and you go across to the other very slowly. And there's two different methodologies of determining where that point is. One's called internal window, one's external. Internal is where the client says, okay, right there, that's where it feels the most distressing. Where external is where maybe the client isn't in tune to their body, isn't able to determine which spot. And so brain spotting therapists are trained to watch the eye movements, the macro and micro facial movements, body language to determine where are you showing signs of distress. Because these points often are so subconscious to us that we don't recognize that we're giving cues to people on the outside.
Sure.
So, I mean, for me, the more I've experienced brain spotting and utilized it, I've even noticed it in my everyday conversations with people. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're talking about something that's hard, they might start looking in a certain point and you start seeing how their body's responding, whether that point is helping them de-escalate or it's actually escalating the situation. Mm-hmm.
It sounds a lot like kinesthetic interviewing, which when I was a police officer, I had the opportunity to go to a conference with the FBI on kinesthetic interviewing. And that's where your body makes certain involuntary movements depending on what you're saying. You know, if you're looking up, you're probably recalling. If you're looking down, you're probably fabricating. You know, all those kind of, which isn't 100% science for everybody. But you go through this list of questions to find what their code is, I guess, is the best way to say it, so that you can tell when they're telling the truth or what's going on.
Well, I guess my deactivation spot, since it's down and to the right, means I'm fabricating a lot.
maybe not. Maybe. you know, it, like I said, it's not 100% with everybody. But then I think about, like, the horizontal stagmus of your eyes will naturally lock in a certain position if you're going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so that... he must be a very smart individual because I would have never, ever thought about that at all. So in knowing where that point is with brain spotting, how do you delve deeper in once that is discovered?
So it's a lot of getting them to pay attention to what's happening in their body. Mm-hmm. So once you find the point, you're looking for a certain level of activation, depending on scenario, depending on client and therapist comfort level. Mm-hmm. Usually it needs to be about between a 7 and an 8 to really in intensity level mm-hmm. to start doing the reprocessing work. That's not always the case. I reprocessed with someone the other day and they were at a 4 mm-hmm. and that was as much as they could handle.
Sure.
And so really it's determined by that intuition between the client and the therapist working with them. But you then you just start having them pay attention. Where do you feel that in your body right now? And it's very interesting, even individuals who are like, well, I can't feel anything in my body, they often will start feeling something in their body. Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel tingling in my fingers. My stomach hurts. I have a headache all of a sudden. Or the other day I was doing a session with someone and they started slumping over, mm-hmm. you know, and their body was just showing the signs of what they were trying to reprocess. Sure. And so it's a lot of, okay, so where do you feel it? Okay, now watch that. See what happens.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. You would think that only the body feelings or sensations would come up, but often it brings up a memory. Often it brings up a scenario. And the client at that point has the choice to either share that with the clinician or to decide, you know, I'm not going to actually say it out loud. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give a little snippet about what's actually happening in my body right now and just keep processing. Mm-hmm.
So as speaking from a skeptical point of view, how much of that would be considered subliminal, that, hey, you're supposed to be feeling something in your body. Do you feel something in your body? And then there's a response.
Well, even my skeptics, like I said, who don't feel anything in their body and in their everyday life are very disconnected from their body. It's been amazing to watch how many of them actually are like, I don't know, they always call it like magic or like, I don't know what kind of weird stuff you just did to me, but yeah. I actually felt that and I haven't felt emotion like that in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's much like I teach a class called Servants by Design where you are able to interact with somebody and tell what their personality type is and then but you know that because of the tics that they do or the phrases that they say or those kind of things. And I've had people say, this is witch magic.
Yeah.
You know, this is not normal. But we are, while we have been creatively designed and we're each independent of each other, there's a lot of commonalities when it comes to who we are as individuals. So being that Doc Talks is a Christian podcast, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you the question that's always asked of me that is the hardest question to ever answer.
Okay.
Where is the rub between this being a physical mental health issue or this being a spiritual issue?
I guess my response to that is, why can't it be both?
Mm.
You know, we're not purely physical and we're not purely like just spirit either. And so I believe it's both that, there are physical components to it. The pain that I have held in my body due to trauma is real,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there are challenges when you go to a doctor with a big history of trauma in your background where they will tell you, oh, it's just your trauma. It's just in your head. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
Right.
It is a physical ailment. Mm-hmm. Now, the root of it might be that I experienced that trauma back then, but that doesn't mean the ailment isn't real in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And so these two modalities are really good at helping get to that root mm-hmm. and process that root, hopefully then alleviating the ailment in the current. I mean, as a believer myself, these modalities are very open to allowing God into the session, into the reprocessing. So when my EMDR therapist went through a certain trauma of mine, she specifically asked me, where's God right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why don't you ask him, where is he? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most impactful healing pieces for me was because I could literally see what God allowed me to see where he was and what was happening in that situation where it was actually, even though horrible things were happening to me, he was still working to protect me.
Sure. Yeah. You know, as I worked in a hospital setting at one point in time, we tried our best to stay away from the word psychosomatic. But which psychosomatic just simply means that there is a physical condition that is caused by a mental health condition or a psychiatric condition. we like to stay away from that term because then people think they're crazy or they're think. But even in spirituality, there can be a spiritual psychosomatic issue of I've not healed in this area. I've not invited God into this. And it has come to the point of now where I'm having manifested physical issues. For instance, anxiety, depression is a physical manifestation of a psychiatric issue that could have been caused due to a spiritual issue. I mean, we look at church hurt, right? That's trauma. That is big trauma. Mm-hmm. And these things can turn into physical ailments. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as we have a lot of church people and pastors that listen to this, at what point, which you said you believe it can be both, but at what point do we seek help knowing that, hey, this is more than just a spiritual issue. This is something we need to address clinically.
I think most often getting help is the right answer. Mm. I see in my experience with the work that I've been doing over the years that most often we're calling spiritual issues things that are actually trauma issues. Mm. And you can tell me to pray and read my Bible all day, every day. And I've literally tried that. Mm-hmm. I thought that if I was good enough, or if I pleased God enough, or if I read the word enough, or if I prayed enough to him, that some of my symptoms and struggles would go away. Mm-hmm. And it became very devastating to find that they were still manifesting even though I was doing all the things. I even did more what some would call extreme things, like going for healing prayer ministry and deliverance. Like, I tried everything in the book, thinking that if anybody said to me, this is a way that God heals someone, I would try it. I went to faith healers. I went to, like, I did, like, Christian individuals who had gifts of being able to heal, and yet I still was struggling. And that wasn't because I did all these bad things. It was because I had experienced a lot of trauma that came from others perpetrating against me. Mm-hmm. And so when I finally started utilizing going to see a therapist and finding the right therapist, which is way harder than it should be,
yeah.
But when I found that right therapist, it was amazing how all of a sudden these symptoms, with still putting in, I had to put in work,
sure,
to get them to dissipate, but they all of a sudden started dissipating, which actually increased my spirituality.
Sure.
It allowed me to connect more with God, mm-hmm, because there wasn't this frustration around, well, I know you can just miraculously heal me. I believe you can do that. And even in those modalities, I saw the miraculous healing. Mm-hmm. When I do therapy with someone or work with them in a social work capacity, I see the miracle of God.
Yeah.
I see him changing their lives. To me, they're so interwoven. And many social workers who are believers would argue that Jesus was the first social worker. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, I mean, it depends on where you kind of want to go with all of that, but there are definitely some pretty solid arguments around that.
Yeah.
When we look in the New Testament, Jesus didn't just say, you know, here, let me heal this big thing. He often fed people.
Sure.
Right? He took care of their physical needs, mm-hmm, as well, right, not just their spiritual need. Mm-hmm. But just because he fed them, does that mean they weren't spiritually fed?
Right. Yeah, you know, one of the best examples that I think about in the New Testament is the woman with the issue of blood. You know, she touched Jesus, she was healed. There was no reason that Jesus had to turn around to look for her. But I believe it was due to her mental health and her being in that community that Jesus needed, not just for her to know that she was healed because of him, because evidently, she already knew that because she had the faith to believe, mm-hmm, but that everybody in that community knew that she was clean then, that issue had gone away. And so you see, he's on his way to raise somebody from the dead, but he stops, just to tell the whole crowd that, hey, this woman's faith has made her whole. And so, as you said, we see all throughout the New Testament that Jesus cared about the mental and social aspect of the people along with their spiritual need. And I really liked what you said. When you get to the point, if you have to ask the question, do I need to see a therapist? Then you should have saw one yesterday. Right. I mean, when you get, it's kind of like I tell my son, if you have to ask, is it wrong? It's always wrong. You know, if there's a question, that's how you kind of figure it out. So if you were to be able to say one thing to anybody listening to this podcast as it is to treatment of EMDR brain spotting, whether or not they should seek that out, what would your message be?
I think that healing is possible. These are two great options of modalities, and they're worth pursuing, especially if you've experienced any form of trauma. And I think, again, it is hard to find a good therapist, but it's worth it in the long run as somebody who's had to fight to find a good therapist and also is now on the other side. Some days I have to like pinch myself and be like, why am I the one sitting on this side of the room? But it is worth it because healing truly is possible. You don't have to walk around with those feelings or fighting those beliefs that feel so ingrained in your being. Mm-hmm. You know, we can process through them. There is hope.
Yeah. Amanda, thank you for being with us here today on Doc Talks. I appreciate your knowledge and your ability to articulate the things to where even I can understand them. So
thank you for being here.
Yeah. So you can find all of our Christian content again at lifeword.org, and you can find me at the.brian.com. We thank you for being here with us today. If you have any questions about EMDR brain spotting, feel free to send us a message and we'll try to get those questions answered for you. Thank you for being with us today. Goodbye.